The day of February 5th, your day. We began last week to be a siman of Kuferi. So some of the quality that we're going to talk about today in terms of siman Kuferi is a little bit of interplay between the Kashas and the Chashavas. Some of you may have been in the Shiur of the Chashavas over the years, so may have heard a little bit of this. We'll try to gear primarily towards Yeridaya learning. There is a basic principle in Yeridaya that Bliyos, any transferring of taste, any absorption that's going to pose a problem in Halacha, is only present when there's some kind of a heat. That's an absolute cloud. We touched on this a little bit in terms of Basa B'cholov. Gemara has a rule that Sonin, B'sonin, B'hadocha, that if two things touch each other, which are tray food and the kosher food, or Basa and Cholov, if everything is cold, then there's really no problem. You can wash everything off, and everything is going to be Heter Gomor. But once heat is introduced, so then we have to deal now with bleas, with absorption, with transferring of taste, and we're going to have a much more serious problem than once there's heat, so it's not going to be enough just to wash off the item. So the real question that we deal with in Siman Kufei is what constitutes heat? Exactly what afi halacha constitutes a source of heat in order to cause a problem, a potential problem of bleas. So we have to really address this issue on two levels. We have to address it in terms of halachically what's categorized as heat, and then in Matthias, and then in reality, physical reality, just how hot is hot in terms of temperature in order to constitute a problem of bleas. So the first issue that the Rishonim discussed at the beginning of Siman Kufei is the issue of Kli Rishon versus Kli Sheni. The Gemara tells us in several places that there's a principle that Allah called the Kli Rishon and there's a principle called the Kli Sheni. Kli Rishon means something which is either right now still sitting on the fire, that's a Kli Rishon El Gavio Eish, or a Kli Rishon Shelo Gavio Eish means that this pot at one time was on the fire, even though right now it's no longer on the fire, but it still hasn't cooled down yet. We'll see what that means, precisely how cool is cool. But at one time, this particular utensil was on the fire. That constitutes a Kli Rishon Shelo Al Gavi Eish, and basically we assume that both of them are considered to have the halachic status of Kli Rishon. Kli Sheni would mean once the contents are transferred to another cup, to a bowl, so that's already considered to be a Kli Sheni. That particular bowl, that particular cup was never on the fire. That's called a Kli Sheni. The Gemara tells us both in Maseches Chulin as well as in Maseches Shabbos that there's a distinction between a Kli Rishon and a Kli Sheni vis-a-vis Hilchos Bishul. Whenever the halacha formulates the requirement of Bishul, the prohibition of Bishul, or fear of Bishul, so the halacha distinguishes and says that Kli Rishon is considered to be an act of Bishul. Kli Sheni doesn't constitute Bishul. My Nafkamina, so the first and foremost Nafkamina in terms of Hilchos Shabbos, that according to the Gemara, it would appear that it's perfectly permissible to cook in a Kli Sheni. The Gemara is a statement in the third draft of the Shabbos. Kli Sheni ain't a mevashel. The Kli Sheni doesn't have the ability to cook anything. So if you just follow the Gemara Kipshuta, if you take a raw food and put it into a Kli Sheni on Shabbos, even though it may quote-unquote physically be cooking, it's heating up, it doesn't matter, Kli Sheni ain't a mevashel. Kli Sheni doesn't have the ability to create a halachic bishul. Whether that's true l'mais in Hilchos Shabbos is beyond the scope right now. There are technical reasons why l'mais in Hilchos Shabbos, we don't do that for a variety of reasons. Some of the rice, some of the rabbanon. But in terms of the super reading of the Gemara, there should be a cloud called Kli Sheni Ein Mevashel. Then the Gemara repeats this principle, Kli Sheni Ein Mevashel, in Maseches Chulin, in the context of kashrus, in the context of Basa B'cholov. The Gemara says that Midaraisa is only considered to be Basa B'cholov if it's Nisbashel B'yachad, Derech Bishul Asa Torah. So too, Kli Rishon constitutes Bishul. Kli Sheni is not Bishul. Therefore, if you take Basa and Cholov and you mix it together in a very, very hot bowl of Kli Sheni, that's not considered to be Basa B'cholov D'Araisa. It doesn't say it's going to be kosher, but at least it's not going to be Basa B'cholov D'Araisa. So in both of these areas of Halacha, both in terms of Bishul B'Shabbos and Bishul Basa B'cholov, the Gemara is quite clear that there's a difference between Kli Rishon and Kli Sheni. But now come to Rishonim and raise the following fundamental question, which is going to keep on repeating itself throughout our discussion today and perhaps the next week also. And that is as follows. Let's say we're not dealing with Bishul B'Shabbos, we're not even dealing with Bishul Basa B'cholov D'Araisa. I want to know a very simple question. I want to know, I got a little bit of chazer mixed in together with a little bit of kosher food, and it happens to be in a Kli Sheni. Lo and behold, it's not on the pot, it's not on the pot that was ever on the fire. It happens, the mixture, the taroves, takes place in a Kli Sheni. Is that a problem or not? Do we say that just as Kli Sheni in a Mevashel, so too Kli Sheni in a Balea? That means Kli Sheni is nothing. Kli Sheni of the Halacha is like cold. Kli Sheni is like tzadin b'tzadin b'adacha. So I may have piping hot chazer that's being mixed together with kosher food. It doesn't matter if I can wash the chazer off, so then it's okay. Well, for that matter, does it affect the kashrus of the Kli Sheni itself? So if you hold the justice, Kli Sheni in a Mevashel, so too Kli Sheni in a Balea, So then, in effect, anything that happens in a cliche is commando lays, it doesn't exist, wash everything off in cold water and call it a day. So if that would be true, what that would mean is as follows. If I have some kind of a trefus, I have a chazer in a soup bowl, not a problem. As long as the chazer wasn't in a pot, so I'm okay. Any mixture, any confusion, any quote unquote bwiyas that took place in the klisheni, a mamish commando lays. So that's if we make that leap of faith that just as klisheni in a mavasha, klisheni in a belaya. So the Rashba and the Torah, Abai, is quoted in Machlokes and Rishonim. He quotes that there was some Rishonim who in fact did make this leap of faith, who claimed that Klisheni ain't a Balea with Gamre. Any shayla that happens in Torah, everything we've been learning about for the last year and a half, is only if it happens in a pot, only if it happens in a Klisheni. Anything that happens in a bowl, in a plate, in a spoon, later on, any shayla that happens on the table is not a problem. The only times there are shayla that could possibly take place, they're only in the kitchen, only with the pots itself. That's what some Rishonim say. And the Rashba quotes others who say that the equation is not correct. That klisheni in a mavashel, that's a din, the halacha, brisk of or the vice official. Bliyas, if it's hot, it's hot, you put your hands in it, it's too hot to touch. So then there's going to be bliyah, there's going to be absorption. This is a really fundamental question about the relationship between bishul and bliyah. This like throws a little bit back to remember we mentioned last year. Seems to be a question what bliyas are. A bliyah is real, a bliyah is something in the physical world, a bliyah is something in the metaphysical world. So those who are assuming that bliyah and bishul go hand in hand, that's a very metaphysical type of understanding. That means it's a din bishul, it's a din bliyah. It's the cliche, it's already no din bliyah anymore. So others respond, yeah, what are you talking about? If it's hot, as bliyah, it's finished, that's it, no ands and buts. So this is a big question in halacha. How do we pass the halacha of ice on the shiloh? So the Shulchan Aruch and the Ramah seem to be make on the Ikir Adin. That the Ik and Ikir Adin, we really do accept this Kula. That Klisheni Einim Avashe, also to Klisheni Einim Avliya. Nevertheless, the Shach and the Taz quote that there are other Rishonim who didn't accept this. And therefore, on the normal circumstances, one should try to be machmir. One shouldn't just assume, well, it's a Klisheni, it's a call of the day, Shalom Aisol, everything's mutter. Not so fast. So the Shach and the Taz, if it's a Shasat Chak, a Machom Hefzer Meruba, Erev Shabbos, Machom Archem, all the classic Kulas that we've seen throughout your day, some really, really extenuating circumstances, then you can rely on the Ikar Adin. But under normal circumstances, when something happens in a Klisheni, you should really assume that it's a problem, which is what we try to do. Whenever we have Shahs that come up in Klisheni, that person puts a milk spoon into a bowl of soup, so we assume that may be a problem. Again, of course, half the Rishon, there's no problem at all, so only a bowl is not a problem. But we try to be machzor lechatchila, we'll try to kashrut if we're able to. So we try, except on this very, except on the very dire circumstances, we try to be machmir that there is in fact bliyah in the klisheni, even though probably mikra din, we do really accept the tzaf and the mechaber there, and the mikra din probably really is not a problem altogether. Therefore, sometimes if you have other sniff from mahakka, let's start with mahakka, sometimes we'll be a little bit more makil if the shala comes up just in the klisheni. But we really have to define for ourselves what exactly does a klisheni mean. When do you know that we're dealing with a klisheni, and when do we say no, this is still considered to be a klisheni? So we said that the basic definition of klisheni versus klisheni is pretty clear from the Gemara, that klisheni means something that's either on the fire now or something that was at one time on the fire, that's still called a klisheni, whereas a klisheni means if its contents are already transferred to the next pot. But even though that's the basic definition, there may be some variables, there may be certain nuances that it's unclear whether they fit actually into the category of klisheni or klisheni. So one issue that's raised is the issue of solids versus liquids. So usually when we speak about klisheni, so we're dealing with some kind of a liquid. They may have a hot water that's in a pot, and I pour it into a cup. So the pot is the klisheni, and the cup is the klisheni. Usually klisheni deals with liquids. What if I have a solid piece of food? What if I have a piece of meat? Slab of meat that was sitting in a pot on the fire. So cold mind that it's on the pot, it's in the pot on the fire, for sure that's klisheni meat. What if I take that piece of meat off the fire out of the pot, and I put it down on a plate? So is that piece of meat itself, it's so hot, is that considered to be chom klisheni? Or is that already klisheni? Since it's already on a plate, it's already removed from the fire, it's already klisheni. What if I take that piece of meat and move it to another plate, into another plate, a serving bowl, another plate, now it's klisheni chamishi. So what is the status of that piece of meat? Do we say that maybe the concept of klisheni and klisheni only applies in liquids, or whether it applies, does it apply to solids also? Why should one think that there's a distinction between liquids and solids? So this is a throwback to a very important Tosafos in Masechet Shabbos in the third parak. He's bothered with the question, the Tosafos was in the context of bishul. Tosafos asks, the Gemara makes a statement, klisheni and mevashel, the mitzvah adin, it's permissible to cook in a klisheni. Tosafos asks, It doesn't seem to make any sense. How could it be that it's mutter to cook in a cliche to get Medina the Gemara? It sounds like there's no other consideration. So nice that we don't do it. But the point of the simple reading of the Gemara, that it's mutter lechatchila to cook in a cliche. So ask yourself, how could it be? You could have two pots in front of you. One of them is a kli rishon, and then you have a pot of kli rishon, and you have a bowl of kli sheni. It's possible that the water, the temperature in the kli sheni may be much hotter than the temperature in the kli rishon. That the temperature in the kli rishon, so it may have been on the fire at one time, but now it's down to, for argument's sake, now it's down to 170 degrees. Whereas the bowl of hot water, you may have taken it right out of a pot, and poured it right into the bowl, it may be 200 degrees. So it's possible, it is feasible practically, that the temperature of the water in the kli sheni may be in fact hotter than the temperature of the water in the kli rishon. So how could it be that kli rishon is nisa deraisa to be lulash? When the kli sheni is hetter gomel, how you talking? How could it be? Why doesn't this correspond to reality in terms of the physics, chemistry? If in the lab the kli sheni water is probably just as hot, if not hotter, so why should there be such a distinction? So Taisus comes up with the following solution. Taisus says that it's not so important the heat of the water right now, but what's more important is the direction that the water is going. We've quoted this Taisus before in different contexts. But Taisus says that if the water is in a kli rishon, so not only is it hot, but the defanos mechamemos, but the walls of the pot are also hot because it was sitting on the fire. So that's keeping the pot, that's keeping the water warm. So that's one type of kli. Kli sheni, although true, the water temperature, the water may be hotter, but you have what's called defanos mekaros. That means the walls of the pot are cold. By definition, they're cold because they were cold. They were never on the fire in the first place. So says Tosfos, when you ascertain whether bishul is taking place, it's not only important to ask yourself the temperature of the water right now, but you have to see which direction the water is going. Kli rishon water is remaining hot. Kli sheni water, everything is eventually cooling down, but kli sheni water is cooling down much quicker because the fatos makaros. So that's the key. That's what ultimately explains the distinction between kli rishon and kli sheni. The kli sheni is predicated on the fact that it's the fatos makaros. Based on this Tosfos, which again not everybody agrees to by any stretch of the imagination, but if you accept this Tosfos, so the Maharshal came up with the following Chumra. The Yamshel Shlomo said that what would the din be if you have a situation where you don't have the funnest mekaros? For example, a solid. It says the Maharshal, those remember the first day of third grade science, the difference between a solid and a liquid. So a liquid takes the shape of its container and a solid doesn't. So when something is a liquid takes the shape of its containers, and then you can argue, it's makaros to have a cup of tea. It's inside, you know, this may be a bad example because it's styrofoam. Let's say, it wasn't styrofoam. So you have the funnest makaros, so it's cooling down the tea. But if I would take a big hot potato and just plop it down inside a cup, so the funnest don't relate to the food. So the food is just sitting there by itself. So that's not really the funnest makaros as Tosfos describes. Maybe you could say it's avir makaros, but that's not what Tosfos describes. To the funnest makaros. So therefore the Mashal says, when you're dealing with a solid piece of food, there's no difference whether it's a kli rishon, kli sheni, kli chamish, kli asiri. The whole concept of kli rishon, kli sheni doesn't make any sense by solid. So it's always considered to be like a kli rishon as long as it's hot. If it's halakhli hot, we don't know what that means yet, the shear of halakhli hot, but whatever that shear is, as long as it's halakhli hot, that's called bishul in a kli rishon. That's the chumrah of the Maharshal. That Maharshal is important both in terms of kashrus, it could be even in Hilchos Shabbos also that Maharshal is important. So if you follow this Maharshal, what comes out is in terms of kashrus, if you have a shayla of, what's in a hot piece of meat or something, you have a hot piece of chicken, and it's no longer in the pot, it's been put in a serving dish, and it's on a plate, it's ready, quote-unquote, kli ravi, and you go ahead and you take a milchik fork and you stick it into the hot piece of chicken, so you have a very real problem on your hands. You have a problem, the ikra din on your hands. It's not just a problem of a chumrah that made the cliche in is bambuya also. No, this is called kli rishon. According to the Maharshal, this is also the ikra din, because you have a bliya in the kli rishon. Sticking a milchik fork into a piece of chicken, even though it's 5 steps removed from the fire, api alocha, that's the same as sticking a milchik spoon into a pot of a chicken soup, which is sitting on the fire. It's almost the same thing, because it's called a davar gush. Davar gush means a clump. It means a solid mass of something. So food, which is the davar gush, a piece of chicken, a hot potato, a piece of meat, so that's considered to be api alocha kli rishon, as long as it's still hot, whatever hot means, it's considered to be a problem the ikra did. So it's not just the chumrah of maybe the bluya is a kli sheni, it's mamish asa medina. So who was the bar plukta of the Maharshal? Who disagreed with the Maharshal? So his very own brother-in-law, the Ramah, his brother-in-law cousin, I think they met both, I lost track of their genealogy. the Czech Rebbe Rakefet. If they were in YU 50 years ago, you probably remember who they related to. So the Ramah was the Baplukta of the Mashal. This, he said, the whole thing is L'hoyev Vamir. There's no difference between the Vagush and Manad Vagush. It's a cliche, it's a cliche, and finished. So if it's a cliche, it doesn't mean it's Mamash HaTagomer. It just means that it's now subject to the Mechoyke to Rishonim from before. Is there Bliyah in a cliche altogether? Which may equal that we probably know there isn't, but look at Chibu B'machim anyway. So at the end of the day, we're not going to be so excited about we're going to be excited about the problem. When you take the milchik fork and you stick it into the piece of chicken, we're going to have problems with that. We're going to want you to kasher the fork. We're going to have issues about the kasher of the chicken. We're going to have to deal with that problem. But according to the Marshal, it's a much more serious problem. It's a problem, mamish meikir at the end of bliyas in the kli rishon. And according to the Ramah, it's only a bliyas in the kli sheni, which let's not forget, the Ramah himself really held his mutter. So according to the Ramah, meikir at the end is really mutter. I don't know whether when they ate each other's houses, how they talk to him, but the Ramah, the Rashal, this major machlekes, that how do you view the Vagush? Then you have other types of cases, which are also questionable, whether they fall into the category of Klevishim and Klevishim. We've also alluded a little bit to some of these things throughout some of the Cheshavashirim in the past, and throughout Bas B'cholot, we've touched on this a little bit. That's the issue of a ladle. So, well, what if you stick a ladle into a pot, and now you take the ladle out? So that food that's in the ladle, is that Klevishim or is that Klesheni? So this is a big machlokes apostim between the Maharil and the Taz. So along the Shishayla, because on the one hand you stuck it into a Kli Rishon, so maybe it should become like part of the Kli Rishon. On the other hand, it's no longer part of the Kli Rishon, it was just stuck in there for a minute, it's taken out. So that's the question. So what would the halacha be if you have a bliya that takes place in the ladle itself? Is that considered to be a problem or not? So we talked about this a little while ago when we spoke about bugs, that there was a machlekes apostim, if you have a bug that falls into your pot of soup, is that a problem? Does that cause a problem? So to eat the bug itself, that's a problem, the cholavei. But what about if you take the bug out, does that trape up the rest of the soup? Do you say that when a bug falls in, that's like a piece of chaz falling in, and that could potentially trape up the entire pot? Or do you say, no, that the bug is a nice and tamless gam, that's a bad taste, we assume, so it doesn't really, doesn't affect the rest of the pot. So me'ikra did we paskin that it's not a problem. We paskin that bugs, those kinds of things are nice and tamless gam, so as long as you can get the bug out, it doesn't trape up the rest of the rest of the food. But there are Rishonim who disagree with this. So within those Rishonim who disagree, those Rishonim who said that bugs that fall into a pot of soup are potentially a problem, so those Rishonim said, well, usually it's going to be bottled shisha. Usually you have a big pot of soup, how many bugs are falling in? So if a whole head of romaine lettuce fell in, a bug, one bug, two bugs fell in. So what's the problem? It's going to be bottled shisha anyway, because that happens to be true. But now comes the problem. When you stick a ladle or a spoon or something in to get rid of that bug, you can't eat the bug, even if it's bottled shisha. If you see the bug, you got to get rid of it. So when you take the bug out, so that ladle you take the bug out with, so that may not necessarily have shishim corresponding to the bug. So guess what? You may have traced up your ladle, because now you have a ladle coming out of the pot and you have only 30 times of hot soup connected to the bug. If you hold that a bug is in nice and tam, which is a problem, so now you've accomplished, you've saved the rest of the soup, but you now have a tray for, you now have a tray for ladle. So that's the question. Is that really true? That may only be true if you hold that a ladle is being a kukurishon. So that's the whole question. So halacha is a shayla about what the status of a ladle is. An afkamina would be when you use a ladle to scoop out something tray, can it cause a problem? Halacha b'ayis doesn't really bother us because we hold that even if there be a million bugs in there, as long as you get all the bugs out, it's not a problem because we hold that bugs are nice and timeless gum, so they don't trade things up in the oven anyway. Just they themselves a tray. So the particular application that the Rishonim discussed in terms of the ladle, we're not going to lose too much sleep over. But the principle is important. What is the status of the ladle? Is a ladle considered to be a cliche, or is a ladle considered to be a cliche? Probably the biggest discussion in the Rishonim about where do you draw the line, what's called klirishon and what's called klisheni, revolves around the issue of iroi. Iroi means literally pouring, means food that's on its way. It's between the klirishon and the klisheni. So I take a tea kettle, so the water that's in the tea kettle, when it's on the fire, is about the klirishon. I take it off the fire, it's also klirishon. I pour it into a cup, so the water that's in the cup, that's called klisheni. Question is, what about in transit? What's the halacha of the water or the treifus, whatever it is, which is in the process of going from a klirishon to a klisheni? Is that iroi, is that pouring process, is that considered to be already klisheni? Once it exits the klirishon, that's called klisheni. But you say no, it only becomes a klisheni once it actually lands, once it actually hits the bottom, once it becomes part physically of the klisheni. So this could be very, very important halacha. What would it be? person takes treif of food and he pours it into a kosher bowl. So what is halacha? Is that considered to be kli rishon? Is that considered to be ki'ilu, the bowl fell into a kli rishon? Because ilu still is the status of kli rishon. That means when the treif hits the bowl, so that's tantamount to having kli rishon in that bowl. What do I say now? That once the treifas leaves the walls of the pot, it becomes already no longer kli rishon. Now it becomes transformed to the kli sheni. When it hits the bowl, so that's only a kli sheni shaila. It doesn't mean every kli sheni shaila is mutter. It just means that kli sheni shaila depends on the mechaber, the ramah, the shach, the taz, mokam hefsen, mokam orchen, those kinds of considerations. Whereas kli rishon is also nekir adin. So what would that halacha be? So this is a very, very, very serious question. This can potentially make all the difference in the world. There's many shaylas. What's the deal? A guy takes a milchik bowl, and he takes his pot of soup, his pot of chicken soup, he starts to pour into the bowl. And then he realizes, there's a milchik bowl. Is that a problem or not? Did that really trafe up the bowl? So if you hold it, iri is kikrisheni, so then the bowl was technically okay. Then the bowl was probably right. Again, we try to avoid klisheni also, but that's a chumrah. So if you hold that iri is kikrisheni, then the bowl's okay. The bowl's not a problem. This could have potentially very serious ramifications in terms of sinks. We mentioned this a little bit when we learned the chuzbas b'chalav in a sink. So 99.9% of the problems are going to be iru problems. So I pour, say I have all my milchik silverware sitting in the sink, and by mistake I pour all the chicken soup into the milchik sink. So what? Is that a problem? Even if it's piping hot. So if you hold that iru is kikli sheni. Then the ikrid, then it's not really such a serious problem. If you hold that iru is kikli rishon, it means kolzman that hasn't landed yet. So when it makes that impact, it's still considered to be kli rishon. It only takes on kli sheni liachar amaisa. So that would be a problem. So what is that law? Is iru kikli rishon or is iru kikli sheni? So the answer to this question is not surprising, and probably in machlokes that we've shown him. But basically what comes out from the sugya, the Gemara Maseches Pesachim talks a little bit about something similar to Iroi, but basically comes out as in a sense of pshara, that Iroi is not quite a kli rishon, Iroi is not quite a kli sheni. What Iroi is, it's mavliya kadei klipa. We spoke a little bit about klipa before, not the klipas, those kinds of klipas, the klipas of this world. So kadei klipa means the very outermost part of the food. It means if you would peel away the outer layer of the food, you would be able to peel off a quarter of an inch, whatever it is. That's considered to be kadei klipa. If you try to peel and then the peel breaks in your hands, that means you haven't gone deep enough. So kadei klipa means you have to go deep enough into the food to be able to get it off at one shot. That's called the shiur kadei klipa. So the Gemara has this idea in Maseches Pesachim that sometimes you can have bleias, but not complete bleias. Sometimes you can have, for some technical reasons, absorption, transferable taste that takes place, but it doesn't penetrate into the entire food. It doesn't ruin the entire food. It remains kind of on the surface level. It's not tzonev and tzonev b'adocha. You can't just wash it off and call it a day. But on the other hand, you don't have to mamish kasher it, or in the case of food, you don't have to actually throw it out, because it never really permeated the entire food. If you just get rid of the klipa, so you're going to be okay. So Gemara does have this concept of v'liya kadei klipa, and basically the way the sugya concludes, the way the Rishonim basically medayik from the sugya, that's exactly the halachic status of iroi as well. That when you have a v'liya ayyadei iroi, so iroi is not quite a kli rishon, and iroi is not quite a kli sheni, it's right smack in the middle. It has the ability to cause a problem. It causes a problem in the food, it causes a v'liya in the food, to the extent of kedei klipa. There was a further machlokes of Rishonim, which again, it's not a Yerdeh topic, it's more of a Chashavas and a Rechaim topic. How does that play out in terms of Bishul and Shabbos? So Rav Natan said that just as Iroi is Mavliya kedei klipa, so too is Mavashal kedei klipa. Therefore, according to Rav Natan, if you take, let's say, hot water, and you're out of a tea kettle, and you pour it onto some uncooked food, so you'd be Mavashal kedei klipa. So that's a problem deraisa. That's where, according to Rav Natan, to make tea on Shabbos in a normal way is probably an issue deraisa, because tea leaves are not cooked yet. Tea bag is not cooked yet, so you take the boiling water out of the tea kettle and pour it onto the tea leaves, so according to Rav Natan, you're being mevashel kadei klipa of the leaves. Bishul on Shabbos is also even a mashel. So any amount that you're cooking, even if you're only cooking the outermost part of the leaves, that's a problem, because just as iri is mafliya kadei klipa, it's mevashel kadei klipa. And Rav Natan's brother, the Rashbam, disagreed with that equation. The Rashbam said, no, just as we said before, bishul l'chud v'liya l'chud, the rules are different. So just because the Gemara says that iri is mafliya kadei klipa, it causes a transfer of taste kadei klipa, just because it causes a problem in your adhaya kadei klipa, does it mean that it causes a problem in our chayim kedei klipa? So it could be, says the Rashbam, that Iruy is mavliya kedei klipa, yeah, but not mavashal kedei klipa. It's not mavashal at all. That's why, according to Rebetzin Rashbam, so it's mutlach atchila, you're allowed to take a tea kettle and pour it onto the tea leaves, it's hetter gomor, because it's not mavashal at all. It's Iruy. Iruy is a cliche in it. Rashbam knows it's hetter gomor. We get all excited about tea with sense, with klisheni, with klishlishi, it's all, according to Rashbam, nothing, according to Rashbam, if you take the tea bag and put it into a pot of water, then you have a problem. Okay, I haven't seen too many people make tea that way. But if you take the pot of water and pour it onto the tea bag, according to Rashbam, it's not Meshach Tegomer. The mice, we don't pass with this Rashbam. Nobody passes like this Rashbam, this Manazet. Nobody that I know. Maybe people who do like the Rashbam, not because they pass like the Rashbam. But the mice, we accept, we follow Rabbi Natan. That was the opinion of the Rube, the Falskim, that it is a problem on Shabbos. In terms of, it really is a potentially serious problem, maybe a problem even deraisa on Shabbos. But in terms of Bliya, so basically even Rashbam would agree, everybody agrees, that Bliya kedei klipa al kapanim derin. So that's how we would pass in halacha in these kind of questions. Let's say a person pours some of the chicken soup onto into the milchik bowl. So good, I'm willing to say the following to you. The bowl is not totally traced. It doesn't permeate the entire bowl. The kedei klipa of the bowl is traced. So go try to remove the kedei klipa. So in the chanam, the post can discuss it. You have some wooden bowls, you have, you know, the old style bowl, you can start scratching away. In the chanam, if you can start carving away the quarter of an inch into the bowl and get rid of that part, so then good, show my soul, then you have yourself a kosher bowl, no problem. If it would have been a kli rishon problem, that wouldn't help, because the bliya permeates the entire kli, like it permeates the entire ochel. But if it's only a iroi, so then it's okay to do kedei klipa. So practically speaking, with none of that, it's not too relevant. Go try to take off kedei klipa with your karel bowl and see what happens. So we assume that whenever you have a bliya that comes there iroi, you have a very serious problem, because the ikra then, the Gemara really seems to conclude that iroi is mevri, at least kedei klipa. So that's going to cause a practical problem in terms of food. It's going to be a potential problem in terms of the silverware and the bowls. It's going to require kashering, and if kashering is not feasible, then you can have a real problem, and you would have to throw out the bowl. When we speak about the Iroi being Mavliya, this Kedeklipa, there's a Taisus tucked away in Masechet Zevachim that points out that there are really two different types of Iroi. Brisket Taisus, two different scenarios of Iroi. There's Iroi Shenifsach HaKiluach and Iroi Shalom Nifsach HaKiluach. Iroi Shenifsach HaKiluach means, as its name sounds, that the Iroi has been broken from the original source. Let's say I take a big pot of chicken soup, and rather than pouring it in a stream, an ongoing stream, onto the bottom, I give a splash or something. I give a zest with the pot, so now a splash, a bunch of liquid comes out of the pot. By the time that liquid hits the bottom of the bowl or the soup or whatever thing may become trace, that liquid is no longer mechuber, it's no longer connected to the liquid that was in the pot. That's called irish and nifsaka kiluach. Irish alone nifsaka kiluach, as its name sounds, is I take a tea kettle and I pour it, and there's a stream, there's a nitzok, there's an ongoing, there's a connection between what's on the top of the pot and what's on the bottom of the bowl. So is there any distinction whatsoever? Do we say that just as Iroi is a problem, so it might have to mean whether it's Iroi HaNifsak, whether Iroi Shalom HaNifsak, so place in the close to possibility, in the middle of trying to explain, we're trying to get out of a problem and a certain complicated thing, we'll leave out the details for now, place just throws out this idea. Maybe there's a difference in Allah within Iroi HaNifsak versus Iroi Shalom HaNifsak. The question is, does that line of Taisha mean anything for us to Maisa? So it appears in the Shulchan Aruch to be a Machlekes the Ramban and the Shach. The Ramban, a few places, seems to assume that even though Iroi is a problem, but Mezer Ramban where Iroi is a problem, that's only Iroi Shalom Nisak HaKiluach. But if it's Nisak HaKiluach, it's Amish cliche in here, it's no shaykes anymore to what happened at the top. Again, we always have to keep on reiterating, just because it's cliche in here is not a freebie, it doesn't mean it's at the Gomor, it means it's better than the Klin Risha. So comes the Ramon a few different places and seems to accept this distinction that Taisus threw out and in the world of Lomdas, and the Ramon seems to accept it Lamaisa, that Irisha Nifsa Kachiluach, that's not really a problem. We're not that concerned with an Irisha Nifsa Kachiluach at all. And the Shach in Simen Kufay, there's a long Shach at the beginning of Simen Kufay, where he tells you all the dinim of Iroi. He tells you, I'm going to introduce to you everything you ever want to know about Iroi. It goes on for this big. And then he writes that, and by the way, he was Makatzer, because there's no room on the page. And he says, if you want to see what he really has to say, so look in the Perush Shach HaOruch. The Shach wrote What we have in the Shach, believe it or not, as depressing as that may sound, this is the kitzur version of what the Shach had to say. He condensed it because he realized the smich has to finish by June. They have finished by the Chag HaSmicha, so he had to cut it down a little bit. But what it really says, what the real Shach really says, he wrote a Perush Arach on the tour. It's printed in the back of the fancy tours, you know, the new Machon Yishalayim tours. So if you take a look, you'll see the Perush Arach of the Shach, and Arach is an understatement. So on this one piece, which in the Shach itself is a whole page, so 20 more pages. Here he just kind of, you know, the kata of the raya. There he tells each raya, mamish be arichas kegola adbaoi. So I call upon him, the Shach basically concludes that the Ramot distinction is not correct. That Irish and Nisaf HaKiluach is the same as Lomisaf HaKiluach. It's also Mahliya Kadei Klipa. There may be a difference in terms of this one Shabbos, but we're not learning Arachayim now, we're learning Yeridea. So the Shach says, Tachlas the Mice in terms of Yeridea, there's very, very little difference. Irish and Nisaf HaKiluach, it's all the same thing. Then the Shach holds on to do what you get. It's hard for me to question the Shach, but especially since I didn't read all his Rayas in the Long Parish, but he then goes and tries to, what I thought was I don't mean Khalil in a negative sense to overdo it, but he claims the Ramah holds like him also. And he takes up two or three Ramahs and he tries to show you whether Ramah really, really meant what the Shach held also. The only problem is there are other Ramahs that he's not Mesiachis to, that the Ramahs earlier on in Yeridea that don't sound that way. So again, it sounds like the Shach is trying to read all these Ramahs into his Shita also, but it sounds like the Ramah himself really did disagree. Could be talking to the Shach anyway, I'm not saying that we do or don't, but a kopon of it appears to me as a machlokes Ramah and the Shach. The bottom line is, Eroi is whether that applies to Irish and Nitzchak, so that depends on, according to the Shach, for sure it does. According to the Ramah, it would appear that it doesn't. So these shailas come up when you analyze dishwashers. We spoke about this a little bit when we spoke about Bas Mechalov, about dishwashers. Dishwashers may be an example of an Irui had Shenitzchak HaKiluach, the way at least it was explained to me, the way the dishwasher works. So the water is sprayed throughout the dishwasher. So the source of the water is a Kli Rishon, because there's a heating element in the bottom of the dishwasher that's heating up the water, so that's Kli Rishon. So the water that's being sprayed out is an Iri Kli Rishon. But by the time the water hits the sides of the dishwasher, it's already, the flow has been broken. There's no waterfall in the dishwasher with a straight stream of water. It's a spraying action. So a spraying action, that's like the spritzing of the pot, so that's an Irish and Nifsach HaKiluach. So if you take the view of the Ramah, that Irish and Nifsach HaKiluach is much less of a problem, so your analysis of dishwashers is going to, doesn't mean it's going to be mutter, it means that your approach to dishwashers is going to be significantly more kal. If you go along the Shach, who says that there is no such distinction, that Nifsach, no, this is all the same thing, so then your approach to dishwashers is probably going to be a little bit more chomer. So that may be one practical nafkamina in terms of analyzing some of the issues of dishwashers, depending on this machlekes the Ramah and the Shach, which the Shach claims is not a machlekes, because he claims the Ramah agrees with them also. So up until now, we've been discussing halachic categories, namely that in order for bluyas to take place, it has to be a halachic klerishon, what's called a klerishon, davagush, atavagush, iru, not iru, ladle, those kinds of things. But there's a second criteria in order to determine whether a bluya takes place. Well, mice does it have? What if you have something which is a klerishon? So it was a pot of water was sitting on the fire. It was sitting on the fire last week. The fire's been off for a week. And now that water, something falls into that water. So you're going to say, oh, that's a klerishon, so it's a bluya, and you have to cash for everything. It's ridiculous. Obviously, if it reaches a certain point, when it's too cold, so then there's not going to be anything. There's nothing to talk about. So at what point do we say that the water dips below a certain temperature? At what point do we say, oh, there's no bluya, no matter what it is? Even if it's quarter for a halachic klerishon, there's nothing to worry about. So this is the famous year of Yatzel Letizbo. So this year of Yatzel Letizbo, the Gemara has, in the context of Hilchas Shabbos, the Gemara doesn't have it exactly in the context of Yeridea, but we assume that it's all the same. We assume that, again, this is part of our old dilemma about the relationship between Bishul and Bluya, but we assume that Yatzel Letizbo is the cutoff point. That Yatzel, just as Yatzel Letizbo is too hot for you to touch it, as soon as you put your hand there, you pull away. So that's called Yatzel Letizbo. So just as Yatzel Letizbo is the cutoff point of heat vis-a-vis Bishul and Shabbos, it's probably the cutoff point of heat vis-a-vis Bliyas as well. That's what we generally assume halacha. There is a Maharshal, which had a tremendous chiddush, was based on his reading of the Rishalmi, that others claimed the Rishalmi didn't really say that, they had a different reading of the Rishalmi. The Maharshal had a tremendous chiddush where he said that's true, that the cutoff point is Yatzel Letus, but that's the Ikra Din Deraisa, that Bli is only applying in the Klirisha, which is Yatzel Letus Bo. Once it's below Yatzel Letus Bo, it's not a problem, but he claims the Dasei Rishalmi that if something is in a Klirisha and it's still warm, even though it's below Yatzel Letus Bo, also har chafal klirishon, that mid the rabbanon, the chachamim said, whatever the klirishon is also mid the rabbanon, even if it's below yasalat, if it's mamsh ice cold, and the summer there was no gezeira. But if it's still warm, it's still the parsha potentially, though the deen shayach to be called the blia, so if it's a klirishon, since most klirishons are yasalat as well, even though it's below yasalat as well, also har chafal klirishon, that they made a gezeira the rabbanon, that any klirishon is a problem, even below yasalat as well, that was the mashal's chumrah, and the shayach is ma'arich against this mashal, shayach in chufay, right, that he doesn't think anybody else accepted this mashal. So then at the end he falls back on the mashal a little bit, but the Ikra Din, we don't really accept this mashal. So the Ikra Din, we assume that if it's below Yatzel Letus Bo, so technically speaking it's not really a problem altogether. Ikra Din, how much constitutes Yatzel Letus Bo? So of course we're familiar with this from Hilchos Shabbos, but this is very unclear exactly how much constitutes Yatzel Letus Bo. Of course the problem with giving an exact number in terms of degrees of Yatzel Letus Bo, you have to find a guinea pig who's willing to test it out. So the Gemara gives you two different ways to test it. The Gemara says either you take an adult and you put his hand in and he pulls away, so that's called the Yatzel Letus Bo. Or if it's the heat, the degree of heat that can scald the baby's stomach, creates a shatinat nichbeis bo, so that's considered, the baby's skin is very sensitive, so that's also considered to be Yatzel Letus Bo. Obviously, it's going to be hard to find someone to do the first type of the test. And if you do the second type of test, they're going to lock you up for other reasons. So it's going to be very hard in the lab to really test with Yatzel Letus Bo. So how are we going to come up with any shear of Yatzel Letus Bo? We're just going to use our own imagination. So the Gemara has another discussion about Yatzel Letus Bo in the context of Shechita. The Gemara speaks about a machlokes where the Beit HaShechita is Roseach Hanat. When you shecht an animal, you're going to see when you shecht an animal, a bird. So it's very, very hot, that area. As you can even see the steam sometimes of the Beit HaShechita. So the Gemara has a whole discussion. Is the Beit HaShechita Roseach? Is the Beit HaShechita not Roseach? Is the Beit HaShechita more than Yatzel Letus Bo? Less than Yatzel Letus Bo? So that we could already begin to test. We can do a shechita, and we can stick a thermometer in there and see just how hot is the blood, how hot is the base of shechita. So that was one possible way of testing Yatzel Letus Bo. So if you can already begin to see that it's very hard, to really give an absolute crystal clear scientific test of Yatzel Letus Bo, so it shouldn't surprise us while we find such a discrepancy in the Bokim as to where, what number do you, the Lamaisa, do you put Yatzel Letus Bo at. So you have anywhere numbers from the low hundreds, it's 110, you have Bokim in that end of the spectrum, all the way up to Rav Moshe, at least in one context, the Yatzel Letus Bo maybe is 160 degrees. Now that comment of Rav Moshe, that's Chiddush of Rav Moshe, Yatzel Letus Bo maybe 160 degrees, Rav Moshe is sometimes quoted out of context. He never meant to say that lakula, he meant that lachumra. The context of the shuvah was about bishul, about yayin mevushal, where Rav Moshe held that when you cook up the water to make a yayin mevushal, so it has to be hot enough that it's called bishul in halacha, so it has to reach the point of Yatzel Letus Bo. So how much is Yatzel Letus Bo? So Rav Moshe said, he thinks, the biggest chum is 160, the wine's heated to 165, so then he thinks there's really no problem whatsoever. That's the good lechol adeis. So Rav Moshe never meant to say 160 is the cutoff point, the kula, means if one is 155, so there's no blias, no bishul. Never meant that. He meant that in order to invoke the kula of Yayin Mevushal, you better make sure that it gets to 160. So where is Yatzel Letus Bo L'maisa? So the other folks can put it much, much, much lower than that. It's 110, 115, and that area, that's already a chashash of Yatzel Letus Bo. And sometimes it's hard to just to test a case-by-case basis. You stick your hand in, so depends whose hand it is. Women generally are more able to keep their hands in hot water longer than men. It comes with a lot of years of practice of washing dishes. So what may be Yatzel Letus Bo for you may not necessarily be Yatzel Letus Bo for her. So that becomes difficult. How exactly are Mishayas? So it becomes a tricky question. How hot is hot in terms of Yatzel Letus Bo? So each case would have to be judged on its own merits. But I call upon him in order for Bliya to be a problem. So both of these things have to be true. It has to be a halachic Bliya. Okay, Klirisha, Kusheni, Iru, Ladles, the Ragush, whatever the halachic definition of Klirisha is. And then in addition, it has to be hot. Again, whatever that Lamaisa pick a definition in terms of how one would be Mishar, you have to let us go. If those things are lacking, if you don't have those two things combining together, then you're left with Tzani B'Tzani B'Adach. It's very easy, just wash it off. But whenever it's no longer Tzani B'Tzani B'Adach, then you have to deal with potentially throwing out the food and potentially having to cash in the kingdom as well.